Welcome to the Getting Real with Hillary show, where ordinary heroes tell extraordinary stories during unique and never been heard before conversations with your host, Hillary Arno Burns. Hillary's unique listening and way of asking questions results in conversations that aren't usually talked about, so you can create the life that you really want but are afraid you can't really have. We are demonstrating the greatness in the human spirit and creating a world where we all reclaim our birthright of joy, happiness, purpose, and passion. Now, here's your host, Hillary Arno Burns. Welcome to the Getting Real with Hillary show. And before I introduce our very esteemed guest, we're going to play a little video.
Well, it's often a fact of life that as moms, we tend to put everyone and everything ahead of ourselves, right? But making yourself a priority doesn't mean you're not a good mom. In fact, it can actually make you better. With us this morning is Kathy Sullivan, local author of the book, Moms Eat First, 5 Principles to Prioritize and Create the Change You Crave. Maybe I should just give this to my kids, Kathy, and let them read it so they really fully understand what I'm talking about. But she has just written this. It just came out on Amazon, hot off the press. So, Kathy, thank you for being here.
Thanks for having me.
I think this is something like us moms have heard, but are we actually going to act on it? Mm-hmm. So kind of talk about the mom-gry. I like the hangry, the mom-gry. So like, it's like, where do we begin?
Well, I think part of what I talk about in the book around feeling mom-gry is really understanding your feelings. So, yeah. You know, what I refer to is I think some of the resentment that moms feel. And many times that's, a factor of the
guilt.
Serving everyone else, right?
Yeah, I think maybe we feel guilty if we're not always home tending to the kids, right?
Okay, now that you've gotten a little taste of Kathy, Kathy Sullivan is an author, mother, consultant, and coach. And she has a very, very special message, especially for women. So stay tuned for this amazing conversation with Kathy Sullivan. Hello.
Hi.
I was almost crying already. Woo. Okay. Wow. Okay, good. All right. So Kathy, as you saw in the video, this is her book, Moms Eat First. And I feel compelled for you to tell them that some of the donations are going to this organization. Do you want to do that now?
Yes. Yeah. So really the impact, the book is really to help women, particularly moms on an individual level. But in the work that I do and really what I want to impact is much broader change. So there is an organization called Moms First, which is not affiliated with my book. It's serendipity. I think that, the names align, if you will, but this organization is a nonprofit and really they're focused on impacting more structural change and systemic change that really impacts, I think, women from being successful. So there's 3 primary areas that they're focused on within their organization. One is affordable childcare. The second is paid family leave. And then the third is about pay equity for moms. So, you know, their focus is really on helping improve communities in the workplace. So a portion of the proceeds from this book will go to that organization. Thank you for that question.
Yeah. And where is that? In case people, you know, are hearing that and they want to get involved with them, how would they reach out to them? Where are they located?
The organization is momsfirst.us, I believe, is the website. And there, it's a small organization, a small but mighty, I will say, from what I understand. I believe they are headquartered out of New York. But I don't want to guarantee that. But I'm pretty sure they're out of New York. I think the team is spread out actually all over, but.
Okay. So if that calls to you before we move on, go to momsfirst.us and you can reach out to them. All right. Back to you, Kathy. So, I mean, I've read the book, so I know the story, but, and I recommend it to all of you. We're going to try not to do the spoiler, give you spoilers, but, what inspired you? I know you work as a consultant, you work, as a coach in organizations, which isn't, you know, necessarily women per se. It might be, but so what inspired you to write this book
called Moms Eat First?
Yeah, I would say a few things. So first is really my own lived experience. You know, I have been a single parent. My daughter is going on 19, and I've been on my own essentially since she was about two or three. I had a son, you know, since then. So my son is 10. So I would say my lived experience as a single parent was a lot of that. And the pandemic shifted that into overdrive, Hillary. The second one is really the work that I do. So while my professional work as a consultant isn't just working with women in the workplace, there is certainly some of the projects that I work on are focused on that. And it's not always just about helping organizations to retain and develop women, but many times it's, you know, trying to develop and retain talent in general. And through some of that work and doing discovery, you know, focus groups with employees, sometimes those are specific to certain communities within an organization. And whether that be, you know, women of color or women who are primary caregivers, you know, those types of communities and certainly others, I've had the chance to really have some individual conversations with other women who have had, you know, their own lived experiences as it relates to being a working mom. And then the third thing I think that really inspired this book is a lot of the research. So some of the studies that have been done that I follow and kind of share in some of the work that I do really support some of the unique challenges that women have. And again, I would say my focus in writing this book is primarily for working moms, but I recognize that, you know, a mom's challenge and even some of the, you know, experiences we have are universal, right? This book will apply to really anyone, not just moms. I will add that too.
Okay. And I know your situation was as a single mom, as a single working mom, mm-hmm. but as you just said, I'm just thinking for myself, you know, I don't even think I was either of those at the time when my kids were really small, but I still probably needed to hear your message, you know? But I'm sure it makes it harder as a single working mom.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm thinking about all the craziness.
Right.
I mean, you might not be a single working mom, but you might, you know, the husband might be traveling, you know, the spouse might not be there. I mean, I don't think I had a lot of that help. You know, it was sort of that. Yeah. So I guess I think it would reply to anybody, you know, moms, even not moms, because I think it's about putting yourself first. And I don't know if we're taught this or it's just part of the culture that it, well, you know, I think for me, it's like, you're selfish if you do something for yourself. You know, others should be first. My mom was never about herself. You know, she was like, she had five kids. She was just all about the kids. So I don't know that there were role models for this.
Right? Oh, so much to unpack there. Agreed. I mean, as you saw in the book or read in the book, you know, when I was married, my ex-husband traveled a lot. So, you know, I felt like I was a single parent, and he was a great provider. He's a very good dad. We have a great relationship. At the same time, you know, and this gets to some of the research that I share, is that a lot of the, you know, caregiving responsibilities and responsibilities at home fall on the mom, right? And again, I want to preface that everyone's experience is different. For many, you know, dads out there, or you know, depending on your relationship and your partner, right? Which may look different compared to others, but those responsibilities are very unique to every family. But to your point, what I want to highlight too, and I talk about this in the book a little bit, was kind of our belief systems, right? And what we were, you know, the environments we grew up in and kind of what we were taught, whether that was from our primary caregivers or from society, right, and other influences. And I think that's really what a big takeaway and learning for me has been through this process is you know, to really, what I will say, it was about untethering my role as a mom and what I believed was my role, untethering those beliefs from what I was told they should be, whether that was from my mom or my dad or anyone else. And I think in part, that's what kind of facilitates a lot of this comparison, if you will, and feeling that, you know, we're not living up to the expectations of others.
And what would be, like, do you remember a belief that you were actually told? Like, can you remember hearing one? Yeah, go ahead.
Gosh, there's probably many. The big thing, one of the big things I think is really religious beliefs, right? So, you know, whether it's religion or traditions, right? Cultural traditions, it could be a whole host of things. Even, you know, whether you had working parents in the house or a stay-at-home mom that was there at home when you were, you know, younger, those are all just, I think, experiences that contribute to what we believe to be the right way to raise our own families. And, you know, I grew up in a single parent home while my dad, who thankfully is still with us, my mom passed away in 2014, which was another thing that kind of, you know, inspired me to write this book. But, you know, I was primarily raised by my mom. My dad was in our lives, but as far as who did the responsibilities at home and who did the disciplining, you know, primarily, it was my mom. So those experiences certainly contributed to, you know, my role as a parent now and some of the beliefs that I held about what my role is, which I'm still, I would say that continues to evolve as my kids evolve and as I evolve.
Yeah. Yeah. And I could see, like, since my mother was so selfless, you know, I remember, and it's in my memoir, but, you know, I was just here for the kids. I didn't expect anything for myself. And then one day, you know, my ex and my son were off playing hockey, but I always had my daughter. And then there was one day when she wanted to go to a friend's house. And I was like, okay, you know, like, it was like a change, you know. I was like, oh my God, you know what? I realized I have no life. And that was like a big moment for me when I said, you know what? I've been here for them.
Yeah.
No, it's, I mean, a little victim. No one really cares. No one cares about me. And I said, you know what? I'm going to have a life. And if they need me, they can ask me. And I started doing stuff that I enjoyed. It was really a huge moment. I mean,
yeah.
Even if it was just going to the library and get, like, I love to get a whole bunch of books from the library, and whether I read them or not, it doesn't matter. But, like, that was joy. I started following the joy for me.
Yes.
And because I realized, wow, I have really not had a life of my own.
Well, it's like hitting the pause button,
okay.
Right?
Yeah.
And for some moms, I think that, yeah, you know, if that's what some moms want for themselves, that's great. But what I write about in the book, what at least from my experience and from some of the conversations I've had with other women, is, you know, again, it comes down to kind of these expectations we hold up in our minds around not just what we expect of ourselves, but also what we think others expect from us and living up to those expectations. And then, you know, with all of that, if we're not tapped into how we're feeling and processing our feelings, that to me is where opportunities for resentment come up, right? Mm-hmm. And because we're essentially potentially suppressing our own desires and what we want for ourselves to keep ourselves whole, when our identity is so wrapped up in taking care of those around us, and it's not always just our children, sometimes it's our partners, and sometimes that, I think, carries over into the workplace. You know, every individual is different, but these are, I think, just the questions, right, that I encourage people to explore and answer for themselves.
Yeah. Well, I think, I'm just looking, like, I'm a manager and I do have people come in as new agents, you know, we're in sales, and it's like, you know, sometimes we, because sales is hard, a lot of people quit. And, you know, you kind of, there was this joke, and it was not really funny, but this guy was playing golf, and the wife says to him, "Oh, how was your golf game?" And he says, "Oh, it was terrible." She said, "Why?" He said, "Well, on the first hole, Harry had a massive heart attack and died." He goes, "So it was hit the ball, drag Harry, hit the ball."
Oh gosh. Harry.
I know it's a terrible thing, but that's how I feel sometimes with my people, you know, hit the ball, drag them along. Like they're not, you know, really, you know, I think I probably hold them longer than I need to. Instead of, like you were saying, letting your kids learn. I know they're not kids, but letting them learn themselves, you know, or letting them, you know, put, you know, it, sink or swim.
Yeah.
And how much is it, should I be empowering them versus letting them go? Yeah. It's like a fine line. There's no real line.
But right? I appreciate you bringing that up, Hillary, because this is in part what I learned throughout all of my own experience. And certainly in the work that I do, is so many leadership principles apply to parenting. And to your point, leaders in the workplace, when we, you know, have to develop our team and empower them, we have to spend time developing them. We have to set really clear expectations and, you know, take time to train them and to coach them and give them feedback. And, you know, the example I think I share and think about all the time in the book is you, like, my kids and loading the dishwasher, right? So in my mind, it's like, they know how to do it. I tell them to load the dishwasher, but when there's three items in there and then the dishwasher is run, that's not very efficient, right? So, but I have to step back and realize I haven't really trained them how to load the dishwasher properly. So that's on me, right? As a parent. Yeah. So those, you know, I think similarities across leadership and parenting are kind of what I'm trying to draw in this book, is that we have to be a leader to our kids, I believe.
And I was going to say, I think it's great that they even ran it.
Good point. Yes.
I think that's awesome. Yeah.
Yeah.
But you're right. How much, and then I think, you know, part of, I think it might've been at the end of the book, but you were saying that, you know, you had, I don't know if you're a perfectionist. Are you a perfectionist?
Yes. And
okay.
Yes,
okay.
And. I'll come back to that.
All right. So yeah, like we have certain, or how they should behave or how they should act or how they should look, or, you know, there's a lot of things that, like, you know, you were saying before, they come, you know, this is how one should look, you know, this is a status, or this is, you know, whatever. It could be going, what schools they go to, it could be whatever. But like, or let's say, you know, somebody's, you know, let's say the parents are a doctor and they expect their child to be a doctor, or, you know, just anything right. like that. How, you know, can we just let the child be who they are? You know,
yes.
and you know, my kids are, they're wonderful. When I was growing up, it was like, you know, you went to college and you got a job, you know, that's what you did. And you got good grades. Well, growing up, you know, maybe my ex and I had different, you know, standards, but I tried to teach them that, but they didn't really get that. So they have been going along their own path and they're doing fine, but they didn't go out and get a job, or my son tried a few, quit them all. And, you know, he's really an entrepreneur. He's doing real estate now. He's working with guys, very successful. He's doing great, but he's now 28. You know, my family kept telling him, just get a freaking job, you know, like, right. What are you doing? Get a job. And he was like, you know, and I was like, it's okay. You can follow, you know, I was trying to be cool. And then my daughter's really an artist and she's following her own path. And it's like, okay, they didn't get a job, but that doesn't mean that everyone who comes out and gets a job is happy or fulfilled, or do you know what I mean? It doesn't mean anything.
Or
it just means they're
following
the formula.
Right? Yeah. I think the same could be said for, you know, people in getting degrees. I think,
right,
for the right reasons, you know, we put pressure on our kids to get an education, and I don't want to dismiss that. I think it is important. But yeah, I think, and it comes back to what we impose on our children around what is expected. And it is, it's a fine line, right? There's a lot of nuance to it. And I think, to your point, Hillary, it's just important for us to ensure that, our kids have their own lived experiences and learn from them, right? There's a lot of examples I share in the book, but one that comes to mind as you talk about your own experiences, my daughter. I mean, she thankfully knew kind of the direction she wanted to go going into college. She's, you know, going into PA school. She wants to become a dermatologist. And, you know, she went away for her first year. And I was so, I mean, I don't think any parent, the most heartwarming thing I heard from my daughter a few months into her college experience, when I asked her, "How are you doing?" She said, "I feel I'm more confident, I'm more capable, and I'm learning more about who I am." And, you know, education aside, like, that is, I think, the greatest gift to any parent to hear. And it's I think, a good testament to, you know, letting go. It's letting go of what you want for your kids, even right, though you think it's the right thing for them, is letting them spread their own wings and trying to fly, you know?
Yeah. And I think, you know, as you're talking, it's like questioning this formula, you know, that we think is the only one that works, you know, like, yes, with my family, that was the only one that works. You know, they didn't understand why he wasn't following it, but right, he's doing better than if he had followed it, I think, you know?
Yeah.
And I think, you know, for me, it's, you know, like, there's that story, in the book about your friend who was just all about achievement, you know? And like, I think that was kind of mine. Like, it was never enough. It, yeah, was never enough. I did this. Yes. I published one book. Okay. Now I published three, but it's never enough because not enough people bought them, and la la la. And you never stop. And it, you know, it's like, you know, I never could feel like anything was a success because there was always a but, you know? And, at some point it's like, stop.
Well, and, you know, so those are all great successes, right? I think it's a matter of how we all define what, like, the why we're doing it, if you will. And I think that, right, the selling or not selling, if you will, is a measure of success. But to me, the success is writing a book, publishing a book, right? For me anyway, I'm sure it was for you too, like, the experience itself was a journey, and there was a lot of reward I got from going through that journey. It took a lot longer than I anticipated writing my book. But coming back, you know, to your point earlier about perfectionism, and I think this is something I think a lot of people, particularly women, maybe struggle with. And, you know, I kind of admitted to being a perfectionist, and I've learned a lot about myself. I would say I'm a recovering perfectionist in some regard, but what I've also learned about myself, you know, having my son in particular, who is neurodivergent. So I talk about this in the book. He thinks differently. He processes information differently. He looks at the world differently. And I've realized there's, you know, a genetic component to that. And I too am probably neurodivergent. I haven't been tested for ADD or anything, but I probably have it. And when you think about kind of the superpowers, you know, people who are neurodivergent have, it's often those types of traits, if you will, around problem solving. And I think as I look back at my life, because my mom often called me a perfectionist, I am a true problem solver. So I look at situations differently. I think I make connections with people and systems and things differently than maybe others do. And while that might come across as, you know, Kathy being nitpicking or a perfectionist, to me, it's about identifying opportunities. But what I've had to learn about myself is that may not be important to my stakeholders, right? So while it might feel important to me to address, I have to recognize there's context in who I'm working with and what their priorities are. And, you know, in some ways as a parent, the same applies to my kids. While I might want certain things for them, if it's not something they want and it's obviously not required, it doesn't impact their safety and their health, you know, I have to learn to step back and let them figure things out a little bit and empower them, because that's how we develop critical thinking, right? Mm-hmm. Is by problem solving. And I don't want to rob them of that, because that's so important as they get out into the workplace.
Mm, that's great. Yeah, I remember the story when you and your friend were in one room and your sons were playing together.
Xbox, and, yes.
Yes, and you could hear them and I could feel it, you know, like.
Yes.
But it's like that, it's like that discomfort.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I was talking about something. I have these two, I'm doing this, it's like a metabolic cleanse. And so I have one instructions from that people. And then I talked to someone else who gave me other instructions and I picked one. And I kept going, you know, is this right? Like I kept rehashing it. And then someone said, you know, there's a discomfort. And I was like, okay, what's the discomfort? The discomfort was, I like to get things right. I'm not a perfectionist, but I like to do it right. And I couldn't do both. You know, like there was, I was picking one or the other, you know,
yeah.
Or it was a mush.
Yeah.
So I had to just choose. Okay, this is what I'm choosing, and let it go. And then yeah. I had peace. And then I yeah. had peace. But until then, I was in the discomfort, like when you thought your son might, you know, and I could feel it, you know, as I'm reading the book, like, but then you were like, no, they worked it out. And it was like, whoa,
yeah,
well, that's such a
right?
great lesson, you know, to allow them to be the problem solvers. And even if
yes.
they run into problems, that's like you had said, you grew more when things didn't work out than when they were going well. And I have to remember that because,
yeah.
you know, for me, I submitted to do like an inquiry for this course and I was rejected and I was so mad. And then I got to see, you know what? I really didn't put a lot of effort in. I just kind of threw it together and, you know, hit send. And maybe the other people that got accepted had put in more work. You know, I'd taken it a little bit more seriously. Like a lot of times I can rely on my natural abilities to get a lot done, you know, but it doesn't always work. So I learned, okay, if I really want to be accepted this time, I need to put a little more effort in. So that was what I learned. And I would never have learned that had I not been rejected, you know?
Yeah.
So I think we do, even though it's uncomfortable, we don't like to be disappointed. We don't like, you know, when things don't go our way, but that could be for our best growth, you know, as you said in
yeah.
the book.
Yeah. I mean, in that those situations apply in the workplace too, right? With leaders and dealing with conflict but I don't always apply these principles as well as I should, right? So there are certainly times when I step in, but in that particular example, I think my fear was how I was going to be viewed as a parent based on my son's behavior.
Oh, when
right?
you're on the Zoom?
So
yes.
When you start peeling back, and again, when you have a child who is not neurotypical, meaning they don't do the same things other, you know, neurotypical children do, it highlights the sensitivity and sometimes the need and feeling to step in, right? But again, I have to learn about my son and what his needs are and help him to navigate those situations on his own. So we do that more now and help him to communicate his own needs. And I think that was, I believe that's probably a universal experience for most parents, is those moments where you feel like you need to step in, but those are great learning experiences for our kids.
Yeah. I was just thinking, you know, I know sometimes for me, when things don't go my way, I want to quit. I want to leave. we know if we don't give them the opportunity to grow through when things aren't going their way, when they don't get what they want,
yeah,
then they will quit because they don't have the, they haven't ever had to go through it, you know?
Yeah.
And I think a lot of times, you know, we pave the way and they don't have to pave it. So anyway, yeah, I'm just looking at that. I heard someone on the Olympics, I think a couple of people, they are, I don't know where I heard these stories, but you know, they were going to quit. They weren't going to do the this one, I forget what event it was. She was going to quit. She wasn't going to do this event. And she ended up winning the gold medal.
Wow.
And she said, I told my coach, I'm not, I don't know if she, maybe she had been in the relay and she wasn't, you know, and he was like, no. So she did it.
And she's like, I won. Yeah. Well, I suspect, right? I suspect that that plays to kind of the stories we tell ourselves, right? Is in the fear that we feel around situations. And, you know, when we don't have that internal dialogue to have our own faith in ourselves and confidence, sometimes we need the external, right, validation and support. And we need help from others to help empower us sometimes. So that's a good story. I hadn't heard that.
Yeah, but also that,
and you know, when we don't have that internal dialogue to have our own faith in ourselves and confidence, sometimes we need the external, right, validation and support. And we need help from others to help empower us sometimes. So that's a good story. I hadn't heard that.
Yeah, but also that,
and you know, when we don't have that internal dialogue to have our own,
we encourage our kids to try, you know.
You know,
I know my daughter, she wanted, yeah, she wanted to be a dancer. And when she was little, you know, there was something, I don't know, she went to grab a water and she had whatever, they said, that's not your water, you know, or something. And she never went back, you know, and it's like, oh no, obviously she wasn't meant to, or she would have, but you know, little things like that can just take us off the path of our dreams, you know?
Yes, so, absolutely.
Yeah. So I don't know what we do about that, but.
We continue
anyway.
To experiment, I think, and take risks, right? And those risks are sometimes emotional risks, you know?
It's and also to encourage our kids, when they're teenagers, you know, they go into having to be cool or not wanting to be embarrassed, right? And stuff like that. That's when it all starts changing, right?
Oh, yeah. And, you know, I'm not sure what your experience, but I realize, and I was just talking with my daughter the other day about kind of expectations. And we actually had that discussion around like how things were when I was in college and how I was working three jobs and how things are just different. You know, she's in a very difficult, study, you know, program, and we wanted her to make sure that she had this first year experience to really get settled and get her feet grounded. And now that she's done that, like now she needs to get a job and contribute to, right, her experience at college. And that again is just another layer of building in that responsibility and self-accountability, right, and ownership of, if this is what you want for yourself and where you want to be, then you've got to contribute to that. So at the same time, I've also realized there's things I could have done differently as a parent to instill some of that in her. Right. So that again is my learning, but, I look back at my life as, I wouldn't say any regrets, a lot of lessons I've learned. And for me, I think they're only good if you apply what you learn. Otherwise, right, you're repeating, right? Potentially negative patterns. And yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Well, this is so such a great conversation. All right. We're going to step away and let our sponsor speak and come back after our commercial. Thank you.
Has social emotional learning become just one more thing on your teachers' plates? Do teachers and students both find it boring and ineffective? Then bring Kikori to your school. Kikori transforms classrooms through experiential SEL activities that help students play, reflect, connect, and grow. Even better, students say it's more fun than recess. Schedule a no obligation conversation at kikoriapp.com/bringkikori. K-I-K-O-R-I.
Do you ever feel like you can't say what you really want to say? Or that you're stuck or in a holding pattern in your relationships, career, personal life, or finances? Are there things you want in life that you've given up on? Are you resigned that this is as good as it's going to get? If you answered yes to any of these questions, then Hillary Burns, host of the Getting Real with Hillary Show, has the solution you need. Hillary is a published author of 3 books and has a program called the Getting Real Process. This process frees you from what is holding you back, allowing you to create a life you love. Don't believe it? It is hard to believe that it could work, isn't it? The proof is that hundreds of Hillary's clients have used the Getting Real Process and are now free to create whatever they want in relationships, career, finances, enjoying life, or just loving themselves more. So go to realtalkwithhillary.com and order Hillary's book, Real Talk, and set up a conversation.
And thank you, as always, to our sponsor, KikoriApp.com. If you want to bring experiential social emotional learning to your children, to your teams, to your schools, to your businesses, go to kikoriapp.com and schedule a consultation. And then just to promote my books shamelessly, this is the book I was talking about where I had that experience where I wondered what had happened to my life. I'd gotten married and I said, you know, what had happened to my life? And this is the story, a very courageously written story, I must say, you're not allowed to judge me, but where I talk about how I refound that old Hillary, that old dancing happy Hillary, and brought her back. So if you find yourself in that position, you might enjoy it. It's called The Second Piece of French Toast. If marriage was my dream, why was I numbing myself? Good question. All right. And then we have Your Bullshit is Your Blessing. My mother's horrified by this name, but it's really about the two sides of life that I had discovered. On one side, everything was kind of bad. It looked terrible. But then I realized there was another side where everything was fun and good, and there was possibility. So I started finding techniques for getting from the sad and sorry side of life to the fun side. And that's called Your Bullshit is Your Blessing. How to stop fixing yourself and start having fun. And then, as the commercial said, this book is Real Talk. The subtitle, How to Say the Things You've Never Said So You Can Have the Things You've Always Wanted. That's what I realized after I wrote the first book, was that someone asked me, why didn't you speak up? And I was like, I didn't even know I wasn't. So this has been a journey as well. You can read this and you can go to Hillary at gettingrealwithhillary.com. Check it out, schedule a time to talk. And I also have a weekly newsletter that I never tell people about, but you can subscribe to that at gettingrealwithhillary.com, and you'll get stories, links to everything, and you can get that every week. It's really fun. All right. And now to bring back our wonderful guest, Kathy Sullivan. Hello. Welcome back.
Hi. Thank you.
Hi. Wow. Well, that was exciting, that first half. I think I could talk forever about all that stuff. So, but I know, you know, we did talk about, I think it was it Moms First? We talked about that and how you're donating a proceed of your profits from your book. Let me hold that one up again. moms eat first. And then Kathy, you know, I know you've gotten your work experience from your other work. If you want to talk about that now, go ahead. I'll let you,
I'll let you talk about it. My business is Talent Principles, which is an organizational development consultancy and coaching practice. So the work I do, I would say I categorize into probably three different areas. One is helping business owners. I work with all organizations, but I enjoy working with smaller businesses who are trying to scale, who maybe don't have the right talent in place or need to develop their teams. So I work a lot with business owners and their executive teams. And sometimes that also, one is helping business owners. I work with all organizations, but I enjoy working with smaller businesses who are trying to scale, who maybe don't have the right talent in place or need to develop their teams. So I work a lot with business owners and their executive teams. And sometimes that also, one is helping business owners. I work with all RAMs that are often running 9 to 12 months because we're often looking at developing change in people. And the best way to do that is to give them the resources, the tools, and the support. So with that, I do a lot of individual coaching, and that's kind of the third category that I spend my professional time working on.
And how do you normally get your clients? Is it word of mouth or? Yeah.
The vast majority, yes. I haven't had to do really much business development. All of the work I've done over the last 5 years, so I'm coming up on my 5-year anniversary, has been referrals.
Wow. Awesome.
Yeah.
That's really great.
And very fortunate.
So can you give an example of a leadership development? Like what size company would do something like that? Could it be a tiny one or a bigger one?
Absolutely. It varies. I would say the majority of the clients I'm working with are probably under 50 million in revenue. As far as employee size, it's going to vary. Certainly some of it comes down to, you know, investment that they're making in talent. And, you know, I think, so my background's in human resources. I spent many years working in talent development, and then I went into consulting about nine years ago or so. And one thing hasn't changed is the importance of developing your people. What that looks like might be different for every organization. So, you know, the method of delivery for me is often doing in-person workshops, doing coaching, like I said, and sometimes those programs are delivered virtually. But I think the needs around that, my focus again is primarily around developing leadership capabilities. So, you know, focusing on emotional intelligence. I also like to work a lot with cross-functional teams. I think organizations, you know, there's some commonalities that organizations experience and trying to get teams to work together, and some just common challenges that people experience. And sometimes what we think is creating conflict between two individuals is sometimes a lack of clarity around roles and responsibilities, or processes aren't clearly defined. There could be a whole host of other things. And that's really what I enjoy about the work I do, is trying to explore what is the real issue that we need to solve for, rather than addressing what's on the surface. And that comes back to kind of what I talked about earlier in the problem solving.
And who usually hires you? The head of the company, or like...
On occasion I work closely with the HR, director of HR, the HR leader, I should say. But the vast majority of my clients are actually leaders within the business. And it depends on, you know, the need that they have. So sometimes leaders bring me in to work with their team, and I usually work with the leader and the team. It's not just the team, because, you know, they are, a unit, if you will, and there's dynamics that go into play. But I would say the vast majority are executives that bring me in.
And how do you, when you said like, what's the real issue? Have you ever found that they bring you in for one thing and then you realize that's not really the issue here?
Yeah. I mean, so part of that, you know, is the discovery work I'll do up front. And just an easy example is, you know, sometimes people are like, we want training and we need training on this topic. I'll do an intake with them to talk about, you know, what are the observations they're making? You know, what does success look like in this? And through that conversation, you know, I often uncover some other potential challenges. So it doesn't always turn into consulting, which is more of what that gets into, is, you know, doing discovery work and providing some consulting services around potential recommendations and solutions. But, you know, I would say more often than not, there are other challenges or issues that could be addressed, right? But at the same time, I have to recognize that my client has certain priorities and my job is to help them align with those priorities and to help, you know, identify solutions that are going to address those.
Mm. Does it ever get sticky? Like, well, you hired me for this, but I see this is an issue, or only if it gets in the way of what you're doing probably.
Yeah,
right?
I wouldn't say, I mean, certainly there may be situations where I've uncovered other, you know, issues that are worth addressing. But again, my job as a consultant, as a coach, and really a change agent is to ensure that I'm addressing my clients' problems and that I'm aligned with them, right? And that we're communicating in that relationship, because it's about building trust. You know, if I see an issue, it's not going to matter if it's not something they want to or can address. Right. So, you know, I just find, you know, in some cases, my job is to at least give them an outside perspective, right? Because I think part of the value of being a consultant and a coach is you're getting an outside perspective. And many times I think people internally are so what I'll call connected, and sometimes it's emotionally connected to the issues, right? So hearing from someone from the outside can provide, I think, sometimes an unbiased perspective.
Right. Okay. Cool. So if people want to find you, they can go to talentprinciples.com, correct?
Yes. Yes.
All right. And what else would you like people to know about what you're doing?
I would say, so the book you can find on Amazon. And I can be found on LinkedIn too, under Kathy Sullivan. I think that's primarily it. You know, we talked about the portion of the proceeds being donated to Moms First. So I'll just reiterate that, you know, the book itself is intended to really provide tools and some strategies to help women to help create, you know, agency for themselves. But the impact I want to have is much broader. And that's, again, the donation that I want to make to Moms First.
Okay, cool. So we have some time left. One of the things, one of my notes to ask you was mindfulness amidst chaos. I think mindfulness is easy when you're calm, but I think when there's chaos or panic or something, it's not as easy to recognize that you've lost it. You're just kind of in the thing, you know?
Yeah.
So what have you learned about that, that you could, you know, impart upon us sorrowful people or whatever?
So I'll share what I've learned, right? So in the work that I do, I mentioned earlier, some of the programming I facilitate is around developing emotional intelligence. So this I all learned through my coaching certification through Case Western Reserve University, which was a fabulous program. And it was what I needed at that time. And it's probably foundational to everything that I do. So, you know, to me, the mindfulness amid chaos is really about, one, it's about recognizing that you are amid chaos, right? Knowing yourself and really just understanding what you need to do to move through that to get to the outcome that you're hoping to achieve. And that's not mindfulness necessarily defined, but I think the examples that I talk about, you know, in the book as a parent are, you know, in short, what I want for myself and my kids is a strong relationship, you know, and that evolves over time. It changes based on the season of life I'm in and where they are as, you know, young adults. And that ebbs and flows, right? So when I'm frustrated at home because the kids haven't done something, right, to help me out or whatever the case may be, my natural tendency might be to get upset and to get frustrated and maybe yell at my kids. So I have to have that awareness, right? And be mindful and choose a different approach and response because of what I want for the relationship. And to me, that's, you know, emotional intelligence at its best, because that strong relationship impacts everything going forward, right? That builds trust. And really what I want as my kids get older is to use me as a resource, to talk to me when, you know, they're struggling, rather than worry about me yelling at them or feeling judged or anything of that sort. And again, that's, I think, a leadership quality that I've applied to parenting. So,
yeah, I love what you talk about in the book, when you walk into the house and you could get two different very different reactions. Do you want to talk about that for a sec? I think.
The example is, you know, if I've come home from work after a long day and I'm frustrated and I can walk in the house and be all stressed out, my kids read that on my face and they might think, well, I'm going to leave mom alone, right? She's not in the mood. And that might like impact our whole evening potentially, where if I pull into the driveway or in the garage and I take a moment and take a deep breath, right? And maybe turn on a song that is inspiring or that changes my mood. And then I walk in the door, it just changes. It's my presence is very different. And that can have a more positive impact on my kids and our whole evening. And I, again, see that in the workplace too, is as leaders, we have to recognize how we're showing up for others.
Yeah, I don't think we always realize how our moods affect people.
Yeah.
In a big way, yeah. So thank you.
You're welcome. So
in, like, what would you see, I guess I would say, like, as your vision for the future? Let's say your book takes off, you know, Moms First explodes, your business explodes. What impact would you want to have?
You know, I think for me, it's about the conversation. Like, what I really enjoy about what you're doing, Hillary, is inviting people to talk about some hard things, some uncomfortable things. And, you know, while I don't get into this a lot in the book, what I experienced is that I think sometimes women moms aren't having the conversations they need to create the life they want for themselves. And whether that's talking with a boss, right? We make assumptions around what our boss might say or do, or our partner or our kids for that matter, right? So I talk about some examples of that in the book. So I would say my vision is to create space for those conversations and to help support people and provide them with the tools to have those conversations.
Wow. That's awesome. And if that did happen, let's say, you know, that's what happened. There was space for these conversations. How do you see the world?
More loving. more accepting of each other and, you know, other people's differences, better listeners. Mm. That would be wonderful.
Yeah. What a planet we would live on, right?
Right.
Mm, I can feel it, right? Can't you feel the energy just sifted? Whew. All right. Well, thank you so much, Kathy Sullivan, for your amazing work, for your dedication to women, for putting your, you know, leaving yourself vulnerable by telling your story in the book in order to help other women. That's very inspiring. And I thank you for that.
Thank you for having me, Hillary. This has been a wonderful conversation.
Thank you. See you next week, everyone. Join us again. Bye.
Thank you for watching this episode. I started getting real with Hillary when I discovered that I was a people-pleasing, pleasant phony and wanted to be more of my real self. We can grow together. If you will like the show, subscribe to my channel, and share this episode with your friends and family so that we can have a world that's more real.